want to be happy. You want to have a good feeling about your life, and you'd like to give that good feeling to others. But at least for yourself, you want a good feeling about life. You're hoping that by your studies and by your working, you will generate happiness. And you'll increase in your ability to fight off distress. In this way, you measure your life. First, get happiness and beat back distress for yourself. Then, do that for your loved ones, especially your children. In this way, you feel life will be successful. This is a noble aim. This is a very normal purpose. But we have to look and see what are the facts. Although everyone wants to be happy in this world, we see so many problems. Why? Because they're endeavoring in the wrong way for happiness. So what we are presenting to you this weekend is nothing that will change you from trying to be happy, nothing that will change you from your career plans, but something that will teach you how to endeavor for happiness in a different way. In other words, how to live your life while working and while raising your family so that you can tap into a deeper connection. When that deeper connection is accessed, then whether you're in family life or working life, or like in Bhagavad Gita, you're Arjuna on the battlefield, because that deep connection is there and you're accessing it, your life is completely different. This is the mystery of true happiness. You must have the deep connection. And that deep connection, of course, goes far beyond matter. So as long as you restrict yourself to the realm of matter, your efforts are doomed. Matter cannot give you the satisfaction you desire. Whether it's matter in the form of plastic or gold or metal or flesh, you have to decide for yourself, what is your identity? If you have a spiritual identity, you must use techniques for accessing spiritual happiness. This is what is missing throughout the world today. People are frantically pursuing material happiness, and then they think their life will be balanced, it will be okay. How can your life be balanced striving for material happiness? It's all one-sided. If there's going to be a balance to your life, you must have the spiritual side developed. So we're not talking about becoming a brahmachari. We're not talking about giving up your job, stopping your family plans. What we are talking about is having a deeper connection as you go on with your family and working life. Having that balance. Otherwise, if you say, I'm just working, I'm just maintaining my family, what's the balance? It's all one-sided. Everything in terms of the temporary body, the temporary mind, and the temporary things that are in relation to your temporary body. So we don't say drop all that, but we do say you need the counterbalance. In this way, you can truly have a decent life. When there's the material side and there's the spiritual side. And as you progress in your spiritual development, you'll see that the spiritual side is more important. But at least there should be those two sides to start out with. And then gradually, as you taste the superior spiritual satisfaction, naturally you'll put more weight on the spiritual side. What you see going on around you in the world is the total lack of the deep connection. That is what Krishna is asking for in Bhagavad Gita. Connect everything at its deepest level. You have to find the supreme source of everything and focus your attention there. Now, you all are wondering, we want material things, we want comforts, we want success, but what is going to prevent us from totally, what is going to prevent our lives from totally disintegrating, just like you see all around you? In Australia, you see the lives of the Australians. Yes. No stability, no family harmony. Each man or woman for himself, for herself, the struggle for existence. No idea of proper behavior, no culture, just grab what you can, when you can grab it, how you can grab it. So you're all thinking, we want the good things in life. We want the comforts, we want the money, we want the success. But we don't want the bad things. Now, what I've tried to show you in preceding days is that the bad things come along with the so-called good things. That's the way it works. You'll see that in your own life, and you'll see it even more in the lives of your children. Each generation gets more and more further out. When you're in India, although India is changing so much, there's so much pressure to do things in a proper way, according to the family customs, the family traditions of what is decent living. But you know what happens when you come to Australia. All that pressure is far away. And now, you can be the own, you can be your own pilot, you can be your own judge. Yes? That's part of the overseas experience, isn't it? To be far from the traditions, to be far from the family pressures. Now you can sample all those things that you saw on television. And there'll be no one to judge you. You can explore, you can experience, free from inhibition. Isn't that part of the overseas experience? You can do all those things that you wanted to do, that you saw on television when you're in India. Now you can do them here, and there'll be no one to criticize you. In fact, they'll glorify you. Right? Just see how drunk you are. Oh, very good, very good. You're one of us. Even they like it. I don't know if it's happened to any of you, but they like it. Find out that, oh, you're an innocent young man. Oh, you haven't had any sensual experience. We'll introduce you to someone. They think it's a great honor. We'll take you to a party. And we'll have someone take care of you, introduce you to the world of sensuality. This is normal. And then you're glorified. You finally got over those inhibitions, huh? You finally got away from all those restraints. And now you're a real, dynamic person who can engage in sense gratification without any guilt. Don't you feel that pressure? And then what kind of pressure do you think your children will feel? If you're feeling pressure, it'll be even more for your children. What's going to happen when you tell your children, okay, you know, we want you to be good persons, get high grades in school, and study hard, and get good jobs, but we don't want you to be so wild like the Australians. And what are your children going to tell you? We don't know anything else. This is all we know. We are Australians. You are different than us. You were born in India, but we were born here. We don't want to be curtailed. We don't want to be checked by all that old-fashioned culture. And you yourself, your own children will tell you, you yourself don't even follow all this. And you're pushing it on us. Forget it. We just reject it completely. And what are you going to say? You might even decide with your wife, let's move back to India. It'll be better there. And what happens when you get to the big cities in India? You find the same thing is going on there. There is a problem that you can't run from. There's a problem you can't hide from. That problem is the lack of the deep connection with the ultimate reality, with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Since you are here, why not deal with that problem here? Then your working life, your family life can proceed in a progressive way, in a way that increases your spiritual wealth. So it's not a question of turning your back on your jobs, turning your back on your education, turning your back on your family. It's a question of adding the deep connection that will bring these spiritual benefits to your life, to your family's life. There has to be the balance. But if you only know one side, matter, 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 that's not a balance. Money, 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 success, fame, respect, and then give a little charity, right? That's not a balance. The balance is when there's the spiritual side as well as the material side. But I know what's going on. None of you want the sentimental rituals and the folk traditions. What you really are looking for is genuine, authoritative spiritual knowledge. And because you haven't found that, therefore you don't take religion so seriously, although you have religious inclinations due to your upbringing. But when you go to university, you're studying so rigorously the science of matter. Well, where is that rigorous science of the Supreme? That's what you need to balance everything out. And then when you add that deep connection, that Krishna conscious connection, you will see that your family life, your work life becomes transformed. You see, there's something going on much bigger than us, much bigger than our material senses, our material knowledge reveals. In order to be happy, you have to understand this bigger picture, this bigger reality. It's not a question of blind faith. Just believe that there's spiritual happiness. No. There are precise techniques for experiencing that spiritual happiness. Meaning, how to align your life so that it is in contact with Krishna. There are two things, matter and spirit. You can look at your own life and see that. There's your body and your mind, that is matter. And then there is the spirit soul, that is dwelling in the machine of the body and mind. So, you are a combination of matter and spirit. Similarly, your life also has to be a combination of matter and spirit. There's the material activities to take care of the body and mind, and then there's the spiritual activities for nourishing the spirit soul. How is the spirit soul nourished? Through bhakti yoga, transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna. Makes all aspects of your life productive in a way that's not destructive. You see, this is a big problem today. The emphasis is on productivity, but no one knows how to have productivity without destruction. Just like Nityananda Priya was telling me how one management guru came to his company. Maybe it was an IBM. Yeah. And the management guru, this is the one from India?
Yeah. No, he's Indian from America.
Right, right. He looked at the department and he said, wait a minute, I see in 3 years that no one has left. In 3 years, no workers, no employees have left this department. What does that tell me? Everyone is too comfortable. There's not enough pressure on them to produce. How do I know that? No one has left. That means there's not enough pressure on them. If there's the proper pressure to produce, obviously some are going to leave. It'll be too much for them. The weak ones won't be able to handle it. There'll be too much pressure to produce. They'll find it too demanding. But here in your department, I see no one has left. It's been stable for 3 years. Just see how things have turned upside down these days. In the past, a department would be glorified that, oh, you've kept the same people for 3 years. Very nice. It means there must be very nice working conditions. Now things are so cutthroat, so competitive, that the managemental guru will come along and say, wait a minute, there have been no dropouts, no one's left this department in 3 years. Phew, horrible, things are too comfortable. We've got to stir things up, put the pressure on, so the cream rises to the top. It's horrible, isn't it? But this is what you're going to have to cope with. This is what happens when you neglect the spiritual side. There must be that balance. So you need to take information about the spiritual side, but in a non-sentimental way. I know that all of you have respect for the traditions, but at the same time you have some skepticism. Why do these traditions? You don't want to openly say that because, you know, your parents or grandparents, they do the traditions to some degree. And so you respectfully go along with it. It's part of your background. But then again, because of your education, because of your job situation, you have a critical eye on these traditions. What's the point of it anyway? It's like Nityananda Priya was telling me that one company wanted to show how holistic it was and how very caring it was for its employees. So the HR department decided, we're going to help you all celebrate Diwali to show how broad-minded and caring our company is. We're going to, right at work, help you to have a Diwali celebration. We'll provide all the facilities. And so, you know, they had the Diwali celebration at work. And then, right at the peak moment of the celebration, the company, the HR department, wheeled in the beer and the champagne on the house. And all the Indian employees just dove in. Wow, this is great, Diwali. Free beer and champagne, courtesy of the company, all glory. These things are going on. Now, how are you going to hold your head above the water? How are you going to keep from drowning in this kind of water? I know what you're all thinking. Yes, there are problems with materialism. There are excesses, but we're not going to go that far, right? We'll keep our heads above the water. This is being very naive. And the honest ones among you will admit that. You can't fight off that current that's dragging you down. Like in some beaches in Australia. Although the water looks very nice, there are dangerous currents underneath that can drag you away. So similarly, you have to see those currents that are operating that can just drag you underneath. Don't think that you're so strong. And you're not strong. What about your children? They certainly won't be strong. You have to find something else to add to your life. You have to find that missing spiritual dimension. Then you can generate real happiness which comes from beyond the body and mind. That is India's greatest contribution to the world. Not simply IT specialists, but specialists who can teach happiness beyond the body and mind. That's the greatest wealth. So we would like that you learn how to generate that wealth for yourself and then teach others. In this way, there can be hope for the crazy civilization of today. Why is it crazy? Because there's so much convenience, so much technological advancement, but zero advancement in terms of mastering the self. No one even cares about mastering the self. How many of you, when you applied for your job at the interview, were questioned in this way? Can you control your mind and senses? Any job interviewer ask you that question? No, I don't care. How many of you were asked by the job interviewer, do you know the difference between matter and spirit? And do you know who is the controller of both? Of course not. No one ever asked you those things. All you are asked about is your ability to produce. Are you ready to sacrifice everything for this company? Like another thing that Shananda Priya was telling me, they asked him, can you multitask? In this company, you have to be prepared to do such and such at 8 o'clock in the morning, another duty at 12, another at 5. Give us your plan. Tell us how you multitask. Of course, I explained yesterday that this multitasking is an illusion. But in any case, the whole point is how much can be taken out of you. That is the whole point. And then, without warning, you can be downsized. But probably you're thinking, we'll get to a level in the corporation where we're beyond all the downsizing, all the transitory employment. And then we'll be successful. We'll be untouched by the economic downturns, the booms and the busts. Okay, it probably will happen to some of you. But so what? Is that all it's going to be to your life? And just to get to that level, you sacrifice so much, you sell your soul. And gradually you realize, we are becoming totally overwhelmed by this situation. We can't see anything else. We've lost track of our own happiness. It becomes lost to us, but we are successful. Once again, just like Krishna in Bhagavad Gita did not tell Arjuna to stop being a warrior, to stop his occupation, but he told him, make sure the deep connection is there with the Supreme Absolute Truth, with Krishna. Similarly, we're asking you, go on with your work, go on with your studies, but make sure the deep connection is there so that your life is properly balanced. That's all. Don't look to the Australians to teach you about how to live a balanced life. Don't expect them to teach you how to live sanely. You have to supply that skill by being in contact with persons who can demonstrate practically how to live a balanced life. So this is the great contribution of Krishna consciousness. We can show examples of persons with families who are working, demonstrating how to live a balanced life. It's not that to practice bhakti yoga, it's not that to follow Bhagavad Gita, you have to wear saffron, be a brahmachari, live in an ashram. No, not at all. There always are specialists in every field, but you don't have to be a specialist. So, we're just asking you to please open your eyes and try to see happiness in a different way. Don't follow the path that is doomed for internal breakdown and trauma. Now, I'm going to show you something that I hope will help your long-range planning about your life. I'm going to show you something that I would like you to think deeply about and pay attention to very carefully. You want to hear testimonies of persons who are about to end their own life. I want you to hear these persons describe their life. How they had the same aspirations as you, family, job, social respect, prestige. But then, like all of us, their bodies are meeting their end. And so these persons, they live in the state of the USA known as Oregon. They decided, why should we wait to die? The intelligent thing to do is to kill yourself first, not wait for the pains of death. There's nothing after death, so isn't that smart? Isn't it smart to just kill yourself? What do you all think? Anyone agrees? Sorry, you have to think about it. Why go through an agonizing long death? Just kill yourself, and there'll be peace. Yes? I can see that you don't completely feel comfortable with that idea, but you don't know what else to say about it. When Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, he went to MIT to lecture 30 years ago, he asked them, where is the department that can tell the difference between a living body and a dead body? You don't have that department here. You simply speculate that death means that the life functions have stopped. But what about the person, the conscious entity who animated the body? Where is that person now? All the chemicals are there in the body at the time of death that were there before death. But something is missing. So what is that missing thing? Now, I want you to listen carefully to what these persons say. Try to put yourself in their shoes. They have families. They had hopes. They had dreams. Just like, who was it yesterday saying, I want success. I want that happiness from success. Where is it? Who said that? Huh? Okay, he's hiding in the middle today. So, now put yourself in the place of these persons. Your body is not always going to be young. You will age. You'll become old. You'll go the way that your grandfathers have gone or are going. Now, what will you think about? And also, please ask yourself the question, why should I not end my life? Why not? Why should I suffer? If there's no hope to enjoy, why don't I just kill myself? I can see that so many of you say, oh, this is ridiculous. But why is it ridiculous? Be scientific. Why not? Do you have some higher knowledge that means you shouldn't do such a thing because something else will happen? What is that knowledge? Or are you just bound by tradition? Ooh, no one in our family ever killed themselves. So. Is that the only reason that you have for not doing it? Or you have some higher knowledge? This is the challenge. So listen to these people speak. Listen carefully to how they explain their lives. They're speaking with American accents, but I'm sure that you have watched enough movies and television to be accustomed to the accent. I was a little worried about whether you could catch the accent or not, but then I was told, don't worry, they'll have no problem. So much TV movies they're accustomed to. Try to see these people's aspirations. Try to see their dreams, their hopes for happiness. Put yourself in their place. It'll be very educational. The last one in the series will especially be very revealing. You're going to see in the last one someone actually doing it, killing themselves, calling a party and inviting the friends, and then in full view of the friends, she's going to kill herself. Because in one state in the USA, Oregon, it's legal. If you've been diagnosed terminally, then you can be helped to end your life. And these persons are considering, this is advanced. Why just suffer needlessly? End it all, and there'll be peace. Now, what do you think about that? What is it that you know that would prevent you from doing such a thing? Doesn't it seem practical? Seems like good engineering, doesn't it? Being utilitarian. If my body is no longer capable of functioning for my happiness, for my family's happiness, why not just finish it? Why go through a long decline? What do you think?
Huh? You become ghosts. That's what he means.
How do you know? Is this just some kind of Hindu granny folklore? How do you know? This is my point. We actually need knowledge, not traditions, not folklore. The person who is the genuine candidate for happiness has real knowledge. Not just knowledge of material productivity, but knowledge of the deep spiritual connection. All right, maybe you should turn off the lights.
Yeah.
Suicide is to blow your brains out because something went wrong that day. Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that. My name is Don James. I'm 77 years old, almost 78. I'll catch up with that on April 2nd, I hope. Stayed pretty much in the Oregon area, Oregon school. Great schools, University of Portland, Reed College, University of Oregon. I don't like the word suicide. I think you develop bad karma if you just commit what I call suicide. Just go out and blow your brains out because something went wrong that day. And I wouldn't want to do that. My name is Don James. I'm 77 years old, almost 78. I'll catch up with that on April 2nd, I hope. Stayed pretty much in the Oregon area, Oregon schools, great schools, University of Portland, Reed College, University of Oregon. I got a job teaching the Portland public schools, loved it, taught everything. Things I had no business teaching, but they needed, needed somebody willing to do it. A couple years ago, I sensed something was happening, and I discovered I had prostate cancer. It had gone to the bone as it wants to do, apparently, quickly, and that really is a problem for you. You know, if I get to the point where I can't process information, and I can't understand what you're saying, and I can't communicate to you, I'm just sitting here. My pain's cared for, but I'm not functioning. I don't want to just hang on. I just don't want to sit there as a sedated vegetable. If I'm really on a path, the natural path, well, a pleasant journey that part of the path, just hastening it a bit, I don't call it suicide, really. I see a difference there. It's really inevitable. It's just ugly for a while, for me and for my loved ones. Why not? Why not say, well, this is the time? But I understood that some Eskimo societies that grandma just leaves the group and goes out on the way in a secluded place and it's cold and she just bedded herself, you know.
Go down lower.
Okay.
It should be a next.
Yeah. Yeah.
My name is Shani, and Bruce. I am 3 feet shy. I do have stage 4 breast cancer, which was diagnosed in December 2000. I am a retired teacher. I am 66. And I'm still fighting, and I will keep on fighting this to the end. I taught at the juvenile corrections for 20 years, and in that time, because of the juvenile leave of absence, and with the Peace Corps, with the police, and worked with Mayans. I was going to spend my last 2 years of teaching in Alaska in a youth Eskimo village. And that was cut in half. In the half, they came home with cancer. And it was stage 4. First I had chemo, and then I had surgery to reduce the size of the tumor. And it had spread to my bone. And then I had surgery. I had a not a big radical mastectomy. And then I had radiation. The apparatus has played an important role in my life. I've been climbing. I've been running. I've been in the marathon. You know, I know I'm not one that will ever be cured. But I know what the statistics are. When you're diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, the prognosis is usually 15% to 20% about 5 years. And so, I get to nothing here now. I'm more comfortable now with dying. I'm a firm believer in our law, our Death with Dignity Act. It gives me comfort, I think. I think that's probably the best. It's just knowing there's an option. Knowing that there's a choice. That when you have their choices.
She's referring to the Death with Dignity Act. This is a law in Oregon called Death with Dignity, that you can kill yourself if you think there's no other hope, that your body has no future.
My name is Arthur Wilson. I'm a native Oregonian. Born in Marshfield, Oregon in 1918. That makes me 86. I hurt all the time, 24/7. I had a good life. But I just wanted to call it quits because I did. The quality of my life is terrible. And that's the reason. As I sleep, my lungs, the left lung, collapses on me somehow or other, and the two lobes stick together. And I thought, when I lift me, I awake in agony. I've got a pound on my chest with my cup hand in order to set up enough vibration to break that clock loose and cough deeply, and if I then exhale, I can put my 45 up through the top of my head and put my brains on. That's a messy thing. I've seen a guy do that. The other way is to try and get over some calcium cyanide. Difficult to get, but I think I could get over it. But that's an agonizing thing. It takes 4 or 5 minutes to go over. So those are my options in which it makes so much good sense to me to usually provisions of the Oregon suicide law to make my exit. Excuse me. I've already talked about children. I've talked to my wife. I've talked to a couple of close friends. My preferred method of exit is we're going to hire us up off to an Irish week. They'll all assemble. We'll have a couple of drinks, some sandwiches, we'll yak for a little while. And when it's time to pull the plug, I'll drink the, what I call the bottle of leaf. I think it's called second or something, but I don't know what it is. Death holds no charity for me. None at all. I'm looking forward to the peace that will ensue, rather than the nagging pain that I live with 24/7. That's about the best way I can explain it to you, John.
I can't understand how anybody else would think it's any of their business or concern, especially now that we have a track record. I could understand in the beginning. I don't have a whole lot of patience for it, but I could understand that people would be worried that somebody would use this greed for persons a lot of trouble, for making decisions for someone else, in other words, not the person themselves. We know how the law works now. It's a lot more people getting the prescription than people who actually use that prescription. But the having the choice is giving all of the people, whether they use it or not, so much more comfort in having whatever the disease is that's taking you much before your time.
I'm Nobella Marie Swart. I'm 59 years old, and I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm on Social Security disability because of advanced lung cancer.
Die?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, 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 really don't want to. And I do find it interesting about myself that I've always, like I say, long before getting this diagnosis, thought it was really odd the way people don't, first of all, discuss death, and then when they do, there's all the euphemisms. And I have found that, I think even I have done some of those things. And maybe not so much in the past, but that now, there are some of those things, like the being afraid of death and dying. Like, I didn't used to be as afraid of it. And somehow with those experiences that I had, I really thought I wouldn't be afraid to die. At least not to the extent that I am now. I really don't want to die. But for me, it is still true that the thought of living and going through, you know, the really horrible, ugly stuff is truly much scarier. And so,
in reality, I'm not dying any quicker than anybody else, because you never have more than just this second, and that's all you have. It's just right now. And even if you're gone, you don't have to be ill. You just like gone. And that's the way I think about life. So it's a lot easier for me to let go of it because of the way I feel about it, I think. My training with the elderly and dealing with them gives me a different attitude. I don't look at it as a negative thing. I've had a very interesting life. My health now, I have terminal liver cancer. Chemo, it's not treatable. It's the rare kind. It started in the liver. It's only in the liver. It's not anywhere else. February 14th, a year ago, I got real sick. Do I plan on taking the medicine? I plan on taking medicine. I could have been prescribed as early as 2 days ago. I didn't have the money it took to be able to do it, and so I put the appointment off until I can afford to do it. There's about seven people that are going to be here. That want to be here, that can deal with it. One of my very closest friends, I would like to be here, but he told me he had to think about it because he didn't know if he could deal with it or not. When I told him what was up, he got really upset with himself because he broke down in front of me. He said, I've got the right to cry because it's all selfish. And I said, well, you can cry if you want to. I said, let it out. That way there's lots of space left to fill up with good stuff. I don't believe and that I need to repent, and my soul needs to bleed, and my body needs to be beat to the ground to get absolution. I believe that I should be allowed to go with as least amount of pain as possible. It's bad enough I gotta go. Why should I have to beat myself up because of it?
Hey, my brat. I love you very much. I'm sorry that another person has to pass away in your life. It's supposed to be. You can. I love that. It's so very interesting to see this guy. And so.
It's to the end of her life.
You want to give things to people yourself, you know? And I want to give them before I go. I don't want them to have to, you know.
To be exercised.
Okay.
You're a new sister fox.
This is James Esther of the New York Times. I was invited to witness the death of Karen Jairush at her home in Eugene, Oregon, on April 7th. At around 7:30 that evening, George Amy, the counselor from an advocacy group called Compassion in Dying, showed Karen a Pyrex measuring cup containing 90 capsules of Secanol dissolved in water. If you drink this, you will die, he told her. Do not feel coerced or pressured to do this. You can still change your mind. Karen looked at the beaker and replied, I want to do this now. She took several small sips and finished the solution with one large gulp. 3 minutes later, as she lapsed into a coma, she said, I think I'm going to go to sleep now. After she fell unconscious, the mood shifted from one of love and support to one of loss and grief. The tears flowed freely. Less than 15 minutes later, Karen was dead. Mr. Amy called a doctor and asked him to contact the coroner. Then, as he left, he told me, every one of these is different, just like every life is different. For the New York Times, I'm James Estrin.
So there you see the reality. I thought it would be interesting for you to see because, you know, Americans, they have the tendency to spill everything out in the open, whereas in India, no one would talk like this. But it's interesting to hear it. To see the lack of knowledge, to see the no understanding of what the destination is after death, just to be so overwhelmed by the bodily pain that you just want to end it, that's all. So I ask you, is that where you want your life to? Is that success? Is that the dream? Is that the goal? to work hard, raise your family, and then your body will break down, and all you can think of is how to stop the pain. That's all. No higher knowledge than stopping the pain. So I wanted you to think about these things. There is a way for real happiness, but you have to know the proper techniques. You have to know, as we said, how to have that deep connection in your life so that there can be the balance. These people have no balance. Just like the last lady was saying, I don't know about this soul stuff. Whatever. I don't want to feel like I have to purify myself or redeem myself. I want to live, but I can't, so I'm going to die on my terms. Others said, there'll be peace. I'll just die and there'll be peace. How do they know? In other words, we're not using our intelligence to analyze all aspects of our life. Therefore, how can there be happiness? Happiness is the property of the intelligent person, one who has complete knowledge. Now, how much of our life are we going to dedicate to getting complete knowledge? You see, there's ordinary knowledge, and then there's transcendental or spiritual knowledge. For the complete balanced life, we need the complete transcendental knowledge, beyond just matter. Then you can say your life is successful. But I wonder how many of you, if you're in the shoes of these persons, what will you say? I'm sure sooner or later this is going to come to India. Sooner or later. Give it another 10 years. And you'll see sophisticated people in Mumbai and Delhi doing the same thing. Having a party, inviting their family and friends, you know, picking out their favorite brand of whiskey and mixing the Secanol, the 90 sleeping pills, with their favorite brand of whiskey. Even dancing, one last dance, like she did. You'll see that soon. This is the logical conclusion of atheism. Why not? Why suffer? End your life and that's it. Who knows what comes next? There's nothing next anyway. She wasn't worried at all. She was being very practical in an engineering way, wasn't she? The body is suffering so much. There's no hope for its pleasure. Forget life. Now, what can you say that will effectively convince someone not to? Someone said, oh, if you commit suicide, you'll be a ghost. How do you know? Is it something your grandmother told you? Why is it that we use our intelligence so diligently for IT, for engineering, for finance, yet when it comes to understanding the mysteries of life, we turn our intelligence off completely? We don't take advantage of the great storehouse of knowledge in Bhagavad Gita and the ancient Vedic knowledge, because we think, that has no value. It's just religious belief. We should think about these things. What is real happiness? And how are we going to get it? Thinking like this is the real wealth of India. And that real wealth has existed for millennia, countless millennia. I wanted you to see this so that perhaps you would feel some motivation to put your life in another direction. Because this is how it ends. Without a doubt, for all of you, this is how it ends. And then what? Are we supposed to simply live a few years of ignorance while being so-called successful and then just die with no knowledge of anything higher? Why not get that knowledge now in a meaningful way, not blind faith, but in a meaningful way, Why don't we get that deep connection now so that we can actually balance our working and family life with the spiritual reality? That is India's great heritage. That is India's greatest gift to the world. The whole world has problems balancing life. But that is India's specialty, as spoken by Krishna to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Mamanusma yuddham cha. Fight and think of me. Do your duty and dedicate all the results to me. So this is Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga. Please think about it. Now, to conclude our discussion of happiness, I'm going to give you some surprising information. I could have a computer.
Do you want the
No. I told you yesterday I had some very interesting information about persons who have won huge sums of money in the lottery. Anywhere from 30 million US to 325 million US. Listen to their lives. This is a story about a man named Billy Bob Harrell. He won $31 million in the lottery jackpot. He was a former Christian minister. He had an ordinary job when he won all that money. And how did he end up? First, let's tell you a little bit about his life. He had a little difficulty struggling to support his family, three kids. And so every week he would get together a few dollars and buy one or two lottery tickets. And one day he found out that he had won $31 million. That means from the government he was going to get 25 yearly checks of $1.24 million each. Wow, he's got it made, right? Successful. Every year getting a check for $1.25 million. That's after taxes. You'd be so happy, wouldn't you? It was great for a while, he said. He bought a ranch. He bought a half a dozen homes for himself and other family members. Yeah. He and his wife and kids all got new cars. He made large contributions to his church. If any members of the church congregation needed money, he was right there with the cash. You could see yourself doing that. You get your $1.25 million check every year. Yes, you buy. First thing you do is buy houses for all your relatives in India. Right? You get them all new cars. Right? You pick out some mandir or some temple, give a donation to the gods. And then what happened? He says his life was just going to pieces as quickly as it seemed like it had come together. Why? Everyone was coming to him for money. Family, friends, fellow church members, even strangers. And he would give as much as he could. He couldn't refuse anyone. First, his marriage broke apart. And then, not even 2 years, only 20 months after he won the lottery, He went upstairs to his bedroom of his flash home, took off his clothes, put a shotgun to his chest, and fired. Just 20 months after he won $31 million. What do you think about that? I know you're thinking, oh, I'd never do that. If I had $31 million, I'd have a cool head. I'd pick out the relatives that I want to give something to, right? I would have financial advisors. I would invest in business, right? But you don't understand that along with $31 million comes so much pressure. You're like caught in a whirlpool. So this is what he did. That was the end of his glory. And after he died, there was a big family argument of who gets how much money. And you know what he said before he killed himself? He told his financial advisor, winning the lottery is the worst thing that ever happened to me. What's going on? Someone who's struggled all their life to provide for their family suddenly wins $31 million and then 20 months later kills himself. And before killing himself, he says, this was the worst thing that ever happened to me, winning this money. You see, without spiritual knowledge, your life goes out of control very quickly. You can't handle the power of material nature without spiritual development. So I want you to please think about those things. But $31 million is nothing. Now I'm going to tell you about someone who won $315
million.
10 times more. This is the biggest lottery winner in U.S. history. He won the Powerball jackpot. It seemed like he did all the successful things. He pledged to give a tenth of his winnings to the church. He pledged to give millions for the poor. In the state of West Virginia, he started a foundation to give clothes to all the poor people. For his church, he donated $4 million to build a new church. But everyone agrees on his problem. He has too much money. Finally, his pet granddaughter was found dead. She was the apple of his eye. She was the life of his life. He said, this little girl means the world to me. Whatever she wanted, he got her. She was just, a young girl, 15, 16. She wanted a car. He bought her a car. She wanted to meet some hip-hop music star. He arranged that. Very nice grandfather. He was so wealthy that he had gone to some pub, some wild adult pub called the Pink Pony. And while in the club, he had $500,000 in cash in his SUV, and it was stolen. I mean, what kind of person keeps $500,000 in cash in their SUV parked outside a club? But this is how wealthy he was, $311 million. What's the big deal about keeping $500,000 in your SUV? He says that not a day has gone by without at least one stranger coming to my door with a sad story asking for money. Maybe you know something about the life of Mahatma Gandhi. After the British left India, he became such a hero. And he said himself, I can't get any sleep. Wherever I go, thousands of people are outside the door crying out, Mahatma Gandhi Ki Jai, Mahatma Gandhi Ki Jai, because I can't get sleep, I can't get any peace. Sometimes I wish I would just die. He said that. And a few days later, that's when he was assassinated. It's hard for us to understand these things if we're thinking, if I just have success, I'll be happy. If I fulfill my dreams. But you are hearing from the life of persons who have fulfilled their dreams. How can you have so much money that you keep a half million US dollars in your SUV out, parked outside a pub? Now, you all, if you are driving a car and you park somewhere, you wouldn't think anything about leaving a $2 Australian coin in your car while you were driving. So that's the attitude this man had towards a half million. A half million, big deal. I'll just leave it in the car. I'll go inside the pub and enjoy. And his beautiful daughter, or granddaughter, 16, 17 years old, she, you know, she's, you know, she had her new car, she had all the things a teenager could dream of, but she was saying, I don't have any good friends. They all want me for my money. They don't want me for my good personality. Just see. So her grandfather, the winner of the lottery, complained, she's the most bitter 16-year-old I know. Finally, she was found dead of a drug overdose. Under some car wrapped in a tarpaulin, she was found. She had crawled under there and died of a drug overdose. $311 million and brought such misery. When he won the money, everyone was saying, he's so lucky, he's so lucky. Now none of his neighbors say that. They say, this guy's miserable. My point in reading you these things is so you'll understand there has to be some other standard for happiness. Please try to understand that. This is the reality of material existence. These are all the things that you're not normally told. You would just read in the newspaper, someone wins $311 million in the lottery, and you'd become envious. Oh, why not me? But you never read the follow-up. Now, Krishna conscious happiness is for the poor or the rich. It's not that you have to become poor to be happy in Krishna consciousness. Simply you have to know how to connect with Krishna in any situation. That is bhakti yoga. And this is India's great gift to the world. Real wealth, spiritual wealth. Without that spiritual wealth, people go crazy. And you can see that today. And why should you think that you won't go that same way also? And what about your children? For the sake of your future family, you have to know how to get the deep spiritual connection to balance your life. Otherwise, everything goes way over to the extreme of crazy materialism. So please think about these things very deeply. What is real happiness? That is the real wealth of India. The spiritual happiness that comes from the deep connection to the Supreme Absolute Truth, to Krishna. So any questions? Hope it's been an interesting session this morning. I can imagine sometimes it was a little uncomfortable, yes? Seeing the things you don't want to see. listening to those people explain things so openly. I know that's not the Indian style. It'd be very difficult to get such a documentary in India like that. The people will not speak so freely. It's not the culture. Oh, I was a successful person. I had a nice family. Even showing you all the pictures, the wife, the children. And then openly describing how their end is coming. But it's educational for you all. I hope you found it in that way. Yes, it was educational. And you could put yourself in the shoes of some of those persons? No? You couldn't? Why?
Even though suffering, you wouldn't die like that.
Our emphasis is on how to learn to live. If you know how to live, you know how to die. These people did not know how to live, therefore they didn't know how to die. We're trying to teach you how to live with that deep spiritual connection. Then automatically you'll know how to die. Because you have the happiness that cannot be touched by old age, disease, or death. That is what Lord Krishna is trying to give in Bhagavad Gita. That is India's greatest gift to the world. Huh? Any question? Yes.
The person who won $31 million was, of course, donating his money to church. So probably he was a bit religious.
Yes.
I've read few Christian books, of course, and they're also really quite good. So probably he would also be a little bit religious. Then why did he have to, he would have known at least a little bit how to live, with the money that he got. He was donating to church. He was going to church.
He was not getting the knowledge that he needed in order to cope with so much money. He was not getting the lifestyle guidance that he needed. Also, you don't understand how powerful having all that money is, how it is such a powerful tsunami crashing in on your life. That's what they're all experiencing. I have others, I just didn't read to you. But these are the main ones. They couldn't cope with this sudden wealth. Now you're saying, I could cope with it, no problem. You say like that, but you don't understand the power of material nature. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains about the three modes of material nature, one of which is Rajagun, the mode of passion. It just overwhelms you. Your life spins out of control. What stops the Indian families from traditionally spinning out of control? The spiritual heritage. You take that away, and you just try to live based on the rituals and the traditions. All that will be washed away very quickly. Because you've cut off from the source of spiritual vitality. And you're just left with the shell, the traditions, the rituals. And then for your children, it'll be even worse. Therefore, the best way to cope with the situation is now to know how to live, and then you'll know how to die. Know how to generate spiritual wealth now. For the sake of yourself or your family, how to balance the material with the genuine spiritual connection. That kind of knowledge is not there in the West. They don't know how to deal with energy as belonging to the Supreme. They don't know how to do that. So they have this big dichotomy, this big split. God is up here and we're down here. And they don't know how to connect the two. That's why there's so many problems. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches you that you're dealing with energy, and all the energy belongs to Him, and there are proper techniques for dealing with that energy. And that energy includes you yourself. Anything else? Yeah?
What's the difference of the person who's living with Krishna consciousness? He dies and an ordinary person dies.
Mm. To answer that question, you have to know the difference between the body and the real person. What do you think? Are you just the body or something more?
The soul.
You're the soul. Okay, so how are you going to live your life based on your true identity as spirit soul? What's the lifestyle of someone who understands their spirit soul?
To surrender to the super soul?
Yes, to surrender to the super soul means to take instruction. Just like when you go to work, what do you have to do? Surrender to the boss. You take instruction, what you must do. Similarly, as part of Krishna, surrendering to Krishna means we take instruction from Krishna. It's not enough just to believe that you're soul. You have to show that knowledge in everyday life. And then you'll understand the difference between when a Krishna conscious person leaves the body and when an ordinary person leaves the body. Just like there's a place for the material body, a home for the material body, similarly there's a home for the spirit soul. Krishna talks about that in Bhagavad Gita. The material world is the home of the material body. The spiritual world is the home of the spirit soul. You have to experience these things, not just believe it in terms of blind faith. What are the scientific techniques for verifying the existence of the spiritual reality? This is the kind of engineering knowledge we need. Just because it's not taught at the university doesn't mean such knowledge doesn't exist. Basically, we're having a university right here. We're having university classes in how to understand the most important things in life. And our hope is that maybe in the future, a few of you will teach this knowledge to others. A few of you will do what I'm doing. Yes.
Is there any reason behind the tsunami and natural disaster?
On what level would you like me to answer the question? Geologically or?
No, on the spiritual level.
On the spiritual level? Okay. Yes. This material world, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, is a place of disasters. And those disasters increase when the earth is populated by persons who have no understanding of how to live a balanced spiritual life. So the earth retaliates, so to speak. It's a reaction from nature that people are not living properly. I read in the newspapers how in South India, where the tsunami came, so many ordinary people were saying like that, "We must have done something wrong. Our lives must not be in proper harmony." They're right. That is correct. And I read that some of the top Western scientists, you know what their reaction was? Nobel Prize winners. "Just see, this tsunami is proof that there's no God. No God would ever allow a tsunami to happen." This is the difference between India and other places. Even the ordinary person in India, although maybe not having precise spiritual knowledge, at least has this sentiment, "We must be doing something wrong." But the arrogant Nobel Prize winners from USA and Europe, what is their reaction? "Now it's out in the open. Anyone can see there's no God. Because there's a tsunami. No God would ever allow a tsunami to happen." It makes no sense. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna warns you, this material world is a place of misery. Don't stay here. Live a balanced life and attain the spiritual perfection. Don't try to enjoy in this place. And then the disasters happen and people blame God. "How can there be a God? There's been a disaster." Doesn't make sense, does it? So you should be thinking, that tsunami could have ended your life. What to do? What will you do now? How can you live a balanced life of spiritual development? That's what you should be thinking. Yeah?
I'm out of pain during the time of death. Like, I had a toothache a few months ago, and it was very, very painful. So, and I've heard that at the time of death, the pain is like so many thousands of bees stinging you at once. So, or you could be in coma, or an accident, or whatever. Mm-hmm. What are the chances? I mean, the chances of remembering Krishna at that time is very minimal. But is it through his mercy or through your accumulative devotional service in life that he's present in your memory at the time?
Yes, that's why if you start now living a balanced spiritual life, you'll be prepared for the time of death. You'll already have develop your spiritual awareness, understanding you're not the body. You should begin now. That's the advantage of living a balanced life now. You won't be surprised by death. You won't be bewildered by death. You'll already have the developed consciousness that you're different from the body. Yes. It's going to be short, yes?
It's going to be short. Very short. There are people like J.V. Krishnamurti. These people have reached a higher consciousness, what they call as self-realization. They feel as happy, but the thing is they don't follow the philosophy of God. Then how do they condemning God? God has helped them to reach the stage of self-realization which made them happy. They do also follow the philosophy of not being material and being spiritual, but not following God at all.
Right. So they have some preliminary understanding that they're not the body, they're a spiritual entity, but they don't know anything beyond that. Therefore, their knowledge is incomplete.
Now, they didn't know it in depth, the way Advaitas do.
No, you didn't listen to what I said. Okay. They understand they're not the body. They understand they are spiritual, but they don't know anything beyond that. Real knowledge is beyond even understanding you're not the body. Real knowledge means to understand the Supreme Soul. They don't understand the Supreme Soul. They just think, we're spiritual. But that's just preliminary.
But they still enjoy the being here. Understand it.
There are different levels. If you want a truly holistic, balanced life, you have to connect your life to the Supreme. Even just saying, I'm not the body, I'm spirit soul, that's not a balanced life. What is the spirit soul a part of? You have to understand the total system. Then your life can be balanced. It's actually not very good to go around talking about how we are all spirit soul without giving any knowledge of the Supreme Soul. You're distorting the reality. It's like saying, this is a drop of ocean water, but you don't tell anyone about the ocean. It doesn't make sense. Think about that. Now what you should do is you should study Bhagavad Gita very closely. Otherwise your head will just constantly spin with, you know, this Bubba said this, you know, this avatar said that, it's going on and on and on.
The whole point I was getting here to was, see, okay, I may admit with the fact that Gita may be the supreme book, but how come these Babas are wrong and how come you are right? Maybe you read it for so long time that your thinking is totally biased toward it.
So, how should I respond to you? Should I say, just believe me? I'm saying you enter the laboratory, you make the test. Isn't that fair enough? Huh? What do you say? Huh? Can you accept the challenge?
I have accepted it. I'm doing it. It's not...
Okay. So, then in Greece. Help yourself and help others. Humbly. Without humility, everything is ruined. Yes?
I can answer this question. In fact, if it's...
No. You ask your own question. Well, wait. You ask your own question. Okay? You ask your own question.
Can you explain Vishishtadvaita to me?
There are different understandings how we are one with God, how we are different from God. Krishna and Bhagavad Gita will give you the inconceivable reality that you are simultaneously one with God and different. If you chant the Hare Krishna mantra, you'll be able to experience your simultaneous oneness with God and difference from Him. Qualitatively, you're equal to God, but quantitatively, you're different. That is the full understanding. Those who don't have the full understanding go one side or the other. We are all God, or else... we are different from God. The truth is both. That is what Krishna is teaching you in Bhagavad Gita. But try to understand Bhagavad Gita, and your life will be successful. I think it's getting near breakfast time. What do you say?
I think we'll meet again in the afternoon.
Yes, we shall meet again. And we'll get into all these things. I'm glad you all are starting to become energized. But there'll be a time, okay? You can tell me all about what this Bubba says. You can throw it all at me, okay? I promise.